You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a late night, Saturday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. And Josh, we're at a party right now. Woo! Yeah. Josh has had a beer, a cup of wine, and a piece of cheesecake, and he is feeling spectacular.
Yeah, I'm not at the point where I'm lost in the sauce. I kind of know my surroundings in the sauce right now. I know enough to talk about Nets basketball.
Yeah, and if you hear a quiet, uncomfortable laughter in the background, that's because this is our first live podcast. Two friends of the show, Marcus and Omar, here. They paid to get in, and we're happy to have them.
Yeah, they paid me $20 each, and I'm not sharing that revenue with you.
No, that's a pattern with you. Anyways, as we get into this episode, the Brooklyn Nets. They're making some money. They're coming off a big win over the Portland Trailblazers, 101-97, if Josh remembered correctly in our first take that we ditched. D'Angelo Russell ending the game really strongly and kind of really winning it for the Nets. He hit a big pull-up jumper. CJ McCollum comes back, cuts the deficit to one. He comes back down, gets an and-one, predictably misses the free throw. Tip out by RHJ, who played an excellent all-around game, and the Nets run up the clock and win the game.
Yeah, it's great to see D'Lo act as the closer and really take initiative down the stretch with getting good shots. He got switched on Ed Davis a few times and really made him pay, not settling for threes, but really attacking the rim and putting pressure on the defense. And then RHJ with two huge buckets at the end, and then also tapping back that offensive rebound, which helped seal the win for the Nets. So great defensive effort from the team. Shooting wasn't great. I think they shot a little over 40% from the field, but it's nice to see that they can win in different ways.
Yeah, I was going to say that was an adjustment potentially at halftime from Kenny Atkinson, because I noticed twice in the first half, Alan Crabb and then more surprisingly D'Angelo Russell, Portland was like essentially switching everything, and they both had, I believe it was Ed Davis actually, both times on them, and they just, oh no, one time it was Yusuf Nurkic for D'Lo, and they just took pull-up threes with big guys on them. And I think, at least in my mind, maybe this is there's a reasoning behind it, or they were just feeling good in the moment, but every time you get that switch, it's kind of your duty to attack the basket, because that's going to give you the highest percentage of not necessarily even getting a layup, because someone's going to come crashing, but of getting an open three for your teammate. And when you don't do that and you don't make the right play there, I mean, again, this is what we say, game in and game out, you don't make that pass, I think it has a wider carryover effect than just missing that one shot. It's a sign to your teammate that I care more about getting my shot than getting the best shot.
I think just now is the first time someone ever confused Ed Davis and Yusuf Nurkic.
Yeah, probably. That's reasonable. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to say, I know I just made a critique, but I thought this was the Nets' best all-around game, definitely since the Cavs game, and I think you could argue probably the second best all year.
Well, besides the Cavs game, it's either the Phoenix game, which no one would argue was a pretty game, and then this has only been the second win since then. But again, it's nice to see that they can play well. Obviously, RHJ coming back, and he's someone that can create shots, especially this year when he's really added that mid-range game. So it's a great presence for the Nets team that's really missing that shot creation. So, and what do you think of Alan Crabb and his return to Portland? That was kind of a big storyline heading into this game. Alan Crabb, obviously the Nets took on his huge contract this year, and he had some good moments, but overall I wasn't too impressed. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of in the middle. I think he played harder this game. You could tell he was running and he was cutting and he was like motivated, which frankly, like, he hasn't totally looked the first couple games of the year. But I think what you said last podcast was extremely astute, and like he doesn't play differently when he plays well and he plays poorly. He was still taking like pull-up threes off screens. They were just going in this game, and that's not really a sustainable model unless you're Steph Curry, and Alan Crabb, as good of a shooter as he is not Steph Curry. So I think the natural, like, at least like kind of first baby step in going in the right direction for him is when bigs are switched on to him, not pulling up and trying to shoot a three in their face. It's trying to go around them and attack the basket.
Right. There was one play, I think it was maybe 2 minutes left, and he caught the ball all the way in the corner at the three-point line, had the villain Evan Turner on him, and he had no airspace to shoot a three, so instead he drove, but he just didn't really have a one-on-one move and just had such an obvious push-off on Turner that it was called for an offensive foul. And that's kind of the liability of his game, and you really want to see him take some steps to improve with his ball handling and shot creation, because when he catches the ball and there's no airspace for him to shoot a three, he's really limited in that sense.
No, I'm with you, but by the same token, I think as long as he's shooting the ball well and he's shooting consistently, I think he's just like long enough to leverage that really, really effectively, even if his off the dribble game doesn't develop that much. Because you see someone like JJ Redick, who's never really had a go-to move, but he'll get layups game in and game out just because he knows flawlessly how to like leverage his shooting, how to get guys to run out on him, how to pump fake at the perfect time, when to stop in the lane, when to make a pass, and then when to go for a layup. But Crabbe's the same way, but just a lot bigger and a lot longer. We've seen the couple times this season, and it literally is just a couple times, he's decided to go to the basket. He's really not that bad at finishing once he gets there, because he can take contact, hang, and just kind of reach those long arms up and put a ball in.
Yeah, he needs to learn more tricks to become an efficient scorer in that sense. But he did have two really great defensive plays, getting deflections at the end of the game, which forced turnovers and allowed the Nets to win. Even though their offense wasn't amazing at the end of the game, they had some possessions led by D'Angelo Russell where they were scoring, but there were times where they didn't capitalize. So Crabbe stepping up on the defensive end really helped the Nets get this win and only hold Portland to 97 points, which is definitely very good for a team that has a lot of firepower, especially in their backcourt.
Yeah, that defense and just like, I think like the all-around like control and maturity the team showed in this game, that's really what stood out to me. This is the first time, like even in Phoenix, they were still taking a lot of bad shots and just like a lot of like clear mishaps on defense. This is the first time in a while, like I think they've, and I'm not saying they haven't been well coached, but like they look like a well-coached like veteran team, even if they still kind of are relatively on the young side. Like everyone was like making the right decisions, they were taking good shots, and it wasn't even necessarily like as good as the ball movement was earlier in the season, but they were just making like all these like functional passes. Like there were these two plays in a row, I think it was late in the second quarter, where they were running a fast break and it was Caris LeVert bringing the ball down, and he saw D'Lo in the middle of the court, sent it over to him. And I know Jim Spanarkle kept harping on it, like you get the ball to the center of the court in transition, good things happen. And D'Lo, instead of forcing up a floater like he had been over the last couple of games, made the extra pass to LeVert. LeVert, instead of throwing up a stupid, weird reverse layup, which he loves to do, or throwing like or throwing the ball right out of bounds, which he loves to do. Sorry, Josh, that's what happens a lot of the time.
He actually loves it, or
I think he likes it.
Right.
love it, like it, gotta have it. Great callback.
Throwback to our first weekend podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but instead, like he like made this like amazing pass, which I guess to be fair is what he's attempting a lot of times when he messes up, but like he looped it all the way around the court to Joe Harris in the corner. He hit a three and then did the same thing a play later, and I think the second time it was more of like kind of a microcosm of what the Nets did a lot more this game, and I haven't necessarily been asking for them to do, but like once I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is kind of what they need. They were leveraging matchups, because it's kind of weird because the Nets, it's the second, that's like the third or fourth time I made that mistake.
Yeah, that really triggers me.
I know. I just assume I'm doing it intentionally to upset you, if that helps at all, instead of a subconscious instinct, because I like the Nets less than the Suns.
Whoa.
Yeah. Let's move on from that. Anyways, yeah, it was.
Do you want to take that back?
No. I'm not. I
gave you an opportunity to.
Speaking from the heart. I love my Nets, Josh. You know that. Everyone knows that. Lifelong Nets fan. Yeah. Josh just pointed to our friend who's a big Knicks
fan.
Apparently
a Knicks fan, but
yeah,
not anymore.
Has a big Nets logo on his refrigerator. Yeah, he keeps saying, I'm a Nets fan, while making like a weird circular motion. I don't know.
He just tore off his shirt to reveal a Jeremy Lin jersey. We don't know what's happening right now.
Yeah, it turns out he's actually at Jeremy Lin Stan 7 on Twitter, who keeps trying to troll us. So,
shouts out to Stephen T.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Coming up on the Locked on Nets podcast, Josh and I discuss how the Nets took advantage of their size on the perimeter, maybe for the first time this season, and then we give you the boss player of the game.
Anyways, what I was going to say is like the big thing that they were doing this game that I didn't really realize they needed to do, but was very, very effective, was they were like leveraging matchups and like leveraging their size, which is a weird thing to think about because we keep talking about the Nets getting screwed over because they don't have enough size, but they really do on the wings, just like the big man position. And you have guys like RHJ, Carroll, and like particularly Caris LeVert when he plays the two, like posting up on guards, that gives you good matchups. And even someone like LeVert that's not that strong, I think he had like Shabazz Napier switched on to him at one point, drew a double, and then threw this like excellent pass to the corner to Joe Harris. You can argue like how many times he's going to pull that off and how many times that ball is not going to end up flying out of bounds, but I just like the idea of trying something else other than passing the ball around until you have to take a contested three.
Yeah, I think that's something that we've seen with the Lord and Savior of our crosstown rival, the New York Knicks, and Kristaps Porzingis, where he's still really not not strong at this point, but he's so tall and so much bigger that he can just shoot over people. So if the Nets use their kind of size at the wings and for take the advantage of that and really are able to harness that as these players get more experience, like a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and like a Caris LeVert, then we could see better results. It's all about being patient and making sure that you don't rush yourself because you know that you'll have that size advantage to shoot over at any time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's like anyone else that really stood out. It was really nice having Rondae back, and like I say this like every time he plays, but it's still like stunning to me how much more confident he is on the offensive end. And you just see him like getting a step and like going right to the rim and then finishing. Like he's like actually like I hate to use the word because I keep using it, but like he's like leveraging his athleticism more than he ever did earlier in his career, and he's just like a big athletic guy, and it's like for the first time he's finally kind of realized that, and like for the first time like we've said like this like uptick in offense has come with kind of a step back on defense, but he was pretty solid the whole game, and then he made two spectacular plays at the end, forcing two straight Portland turnovers essentially by himself to like seal this one for the Nets.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think obviously it's nice to have RSJ back. It seems like tonight, Booker and also Big Z, Tyler Zeller, will be back in the fold.
Oh, is that his name?
You know what? I'm going to give him that nickname right now. I used to call him Psycho Z because he came right after Hansbrough left at UNC. Yeah. And another Tyler, obviously. So it kind of was a natural fit. But I don't know if that caught on with anyone. Maybe my dad. But
which is our target demographics.
Yeah, definitely. I think Dinwiddie's questionable tonight against the Jazz. If he doesn't play, what are the implications of that?
Well, when this podcast comes up, the game will already be over. So people can – and that's kind of good because people can know if we're right or wrong about it. And I think that's like a big, big deal against a Utah Jazz team that's so defensively like inclined and has so many strong defenders and has a real I'd say probably the best rim protector in basketball in Rudy Gobert. That's going to make it really difficult on this Nets team because we already talk about how they don't have enough ball handling and playmaking just with Dinwiddie and Russell, the only guys really consistently capable of doing that. You take Dinwiddie out of that equation, this is the kind of game that T-Lo's going to have to play like 35 to 38 minutes, and I don't think Kenny Atkinson's willing to do that ever, or at least that's kind of what it seems like. So I'm thinking it's going to be an offensive struggle for the Nets, and I hope they prove me wrong. And when you're listening to this, you'll know if they did or not.
Hey guys, if you haven't already, we'd really appreciate it if you subscribe and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It really does make a big difference. You might be asking yourself, why should I do that? Why should I help them out? I would answer you by paraphrasing the great Kanye West, my presence is a present, kiss my butt.
Yeah, I think Miami and Utah played last night, and the score was 84 to 74.
Yeah,
it's so reminiscent of true 80s basketball when the game was so much purer, right, Gavin?
Well, no, it's not. No, in the 80s, the NBA was 90s, pretty high scoring. Yeah, 90s and like early 2000s. Like when we were growing up, like there were like, I remember like when I first got into the NBA, I'd like look up like Knicks scores and it would be like 67, 65 with like 4 minutes left. I'd be like, oh, this is disgusting.
Remember when the Knicks scored, didn't they score in the 50s against Boston one time? Like when they had the big three?
You know, I don't remember that, but it's possible. It was so traumatic, I blacked it out. Yeah. It was a dream for you, a nightmare for me. All right. That's about all I had on this. It was a great win. It helped that Damian Lillard wasn't that hot, but you got to give guys like D'Lo some credit. Like we always bag on him when like opposing guards go off on him, and like tonight it didn't totally happen.
Yeah, no, I think Lillard and McCollum definitely missed some shots that they normally hit, but at the same time, the Nets did a good job of making sure they didn't go on a huge run and take over the game. Portland had an 89-84 lead at one point, and then I really thought that the game was over, but the Nets showed great perseverance and being able to come back and take the win. And right now they're 5-7, same record as the Cavs, as the Thunder. So are the Nets better than those teams? I think we can safely say that it's definitely possible.
Yeah, we can lock it in. I think I don't even think you have to throw the possible in there. I'd say my one other takeaway from this game, and it wasn't a Nets thing. Shabazz Napier was like really impressive throughout this game. It wasn't like, it didn't feel like a massive drop off when he came in for Lillard and McCollum. And I know that was kind of just seeing it on the right night and seeing him on the right night, but like he was like, he had like one like nasty dribble drive move where he was like going to the lane and he just did this little ball fake and you saw like three defenders' heads turn the wrong way, switched hands and laid it in. He was good.
I must have missed that.
Shabazz Napier.
Yeah, no. So I only caught the second half. I tried to play it off like I caught the whole game. But
you know, I wasn't going to say it, Josh, but I kept trying to mention a lot of first half stuff to push you into acknowledging that and that you're not doing our fans justice with your limited work ethic as of now.
I really need to get on that. That's on me. Next game, you guys will have a full detailed scouting report. Shoot around. I'll be there. Post-game show, I got it. Anything Bob Loren says in that post-game or pre-game show, I have you.
You're going to transcribe everything he says throughout the game.
Yes.
Yeah, you're gonna have. We're going to have notes on who am I as well from you.
Yeah, I mean, I always guess at the time. I think.
Yeah. Did you get Biggie this time?
Oh, was it Biggie?
It was Caleb Swanigan.
It was a game either 2 days ago or 3 days ago. So I'm thinking if it was the Denver or Phoenix game, but I got it right away.
Okay, that's good. Whatchamacallit, they've been pretty like inconsistent. Like, no one's been like dominant this year. Because Panarco got it wrong last night, so and he only had like called like two games before, so he was just sitting on top of the leaderboard at 1-2, which I thought was a little inflated. Mm-hmm. And then like the one tonight, the last clue was Michael Grady should get this because it was Caleb Swanigan, and he hosts a radio show in Indiana, so he should obviously know like the best player in Purdue's history, arguably, and he couldn't.
Robbie
Hummel. I know you're gonna say it. Or Juwan Johnson, yeah, Etuan Moore. Yeah, great teams. But no, it's definitely a Biggie Swanigan. Almost set college basketball's
and also double record. AJ Hammonds.
Oh wow, yeah, we're only deep cuts on the show.
Mavericks player.
Yes, I think we should probably just about wrap this up on that note. Was there a boss player of the game? I don't have a call of the game because we had no shots at Chris Carino, but he doesn't quite have the theoretics of either Ryan Rucker or Ian Eagles. More just like solid, good broadcast.
So I turn on the game and I'm like, oh, that's not Ian. I'm like, that's not Ryan.
I'm really confused.
Like, that's not Ryan either. I get to like, I'm like, oh, Carino. But yeah, he does a great job, especially on radio. So definitely, I think back in 2005, there were many games when I was driving out to Long Island when I had to listen to Chris Carino.
You were driving by yourself as a 10-year-old.
Okay. I was in the car. The triple overtime game against Detroit where Chauncey Billups tied it up on a half-court shot, and then Scalabrine really carried us to the win in the playoffs.
Oh my God.
I remember listening to the voice of Chris Carino. So that was – he's a lot of fondness in my heart for Chris Carino.
Okay. My question was, did you have a player of the game?
On that note, I did have a player of the game. D'Angelo Russell closed it out for the Nets, even though he was 1 of 3 on free throws at the end. He got it done, hit a couple of big baskets, and also dished some assists to RHJ and put him in a good position to score. So D'Angelo, for being able to close it out in the fourth quarter, he's the boss player of the game. It might be his first of the year, so...
Yeah. You have a love-hate relationship that trends towards hate.
Okay, well, I like to give it to the role players. I like to give it to the unsung heroes.
Yeah, okay, whatever. with that, we will wrap up this episode of Locked On Nets. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Remember, we will be back on, I'm going to say, Monday with our Utah Jazz review.